If you see the light at the end of the tunnel, rejoice. Then make absolutely certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's not something else coming the other direction. We'll talk about this, sort of, today on Principles and Policies. Hello, I'm Chuck Michaelis. I am your host on Principles and Policy. I've been the lone host on Principles and Policy since, the first quarter of 2023. And, of course, since it's the last show of 2024, and also the last show, at least unless we land at another home, this is our last show on WLRY. WLRY will be going silent on December 31st. Until such time as I believe Radio U has bought the frequency. You don't buy the station anymore. You buy the frequency, and then you set up your own. I think they'll probably come back on. They haven't bought the station. That's privately owned on privately owned land. They may have bought the equipment and all that. I don't know. They bought the frequency, and they'll be setting up their own system. Yeah, so we're going to get a little nostalgic. You know, many of you are aware, my broadcast partner was a guy who simply was unbeatable. He was just the man who got things done, the man who had the information, the man. He and I worked very well together. He was current events, and I was history and political philosophy. I think his degree might have been in political philosophy or something. But you know what he did with that when he first came out of college? He managed the Bob Evans restaurant. So that tells you that sometimes you can't get a job in your field. So what do? Well, the light at the end of the tunnel is the fact that you can get a job someplace else. I've been sort of amazed. I'm in the middle of a job search too, because my company, Rain Rock Nutritionals, who was a sponsor of this program and exists no more. Rain Rock Nutritionals is gone. And Rocky Fork Formula is the owner of Rain Rock Nutritionals, and that's my company as well, is also gone as of the end of this year. And so I'm looking for work. I'm ancient. I'm 67 years old. I'll turn 68 in February, but I don't feel or look sick that age. So what am I doing? I'm looking for work. And I'm looking for that light at the end of the tunnel. Well, by the way, this is our show for December 28th, 2024, being recorded on December 27th, 2024. And I tried to work it in to do it earlier, but you know, something was going on the 25th. I cannot remember exactly what it was, but I was really busy that day. Oh yes, I remember. It was Christmas morning, and my wife and I went over to our daughter and her husband and our grandkids' house, and we played with the grandkids while they played with their toys and showed off their stuff and shot us with their Nerf guns and all that stuff. So we were busy, and then they came over to our house and we had a feast. Sort of thing that I hope you were able to do on Christmas, that you were able to be with family and have fun and enjoy your children, grandchildren, if you're not married yet and don't have kids. I hope you enjoyed someone else's kids, a cousin or a brother or a sister or whoever, neighbors, whoever. I hope you enjoyed that. We are still feasting. I have a daughter who lives in Mobile, Alabama. You've heard me mention that. And she's here. She came up, and she and her husband were going to stay with her husband's parents. They switch off. This was their year, her husband's parents. And unfortunately, he got sick the day before they were supposed to arrive, and they were going to spend one night while he got over the flu. Well, he's got COVID. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. that's something else coming down the tunnel. And, you know, what do you do? And so they're visiting family from our place. And, you know, I've been doing other things around the house while I close my business down. And many of you know that my mother died 3 years ago in November, because we talked about that and the fact that we were building her an apartment. On the backside of my barn, we were building her an apartment. Well, once she died, we didn't stop. We did slow down a great deal. And we are finishing that up. Into the new year, we'll be finished with that project. You know, the light, my mom, very interestingly, was 88 years old. Not too far from being, just 4 months from being 89. She had not been feeling well and had gotten into a situation where she had to call her neighbor to help her move, because she got quite ill and couldn't move. And the neighbor told us what was going on. We said, call the ambulance right now. And the guy called the ambulance, and they took her to the hospital on a Sunday. I still remember that was a Sunday, because we got the word Sunday evening. And on that Sunday, they took her in. They said, oh, you're dehydrated. And they started pumping her full of fluids. And they said, are you having any trouble? She described what troubles she was having. They took her in for an MRI. And by Monday, she had a cancer diagnosis. Not only did she have a cancer diagnosis, she had a stage 4 metastatic cancer diagnosis. She had colon cancer that had spread to her liver and her pancreas, and was getting ready to go in. It was starting in her lungs. And they said, we might be able to treat this. And they got into it further, and they said, you are terminal. This was on a Monday. By Tuesday, she had a terminal diagnosis, and they sent her. They said, "You got to go to hospice." She wanted to be released to her home, and my mom's a hoarder, or was a hoarder, and they said, "We cannot release you to your home." And they told us, and you know, my sister, who's the executor of the estate and was closest to my mom. They said, you cannot go to that. And my sister took them aside and said, good, we don't want her to go back to that place. And we'd been working on a place for her to come live. So, that was going to be the spot. We were going to get her treatment and bring her up here and have her live. Well, she had this terminal diagnosis. And, this was on Tuesday. They sent her to hospice, Friday, she had slipped into a coma, and by Saturday she had gone. Saturday morning, in fact, I had hurried up and got in the car and drove down to West Palm Beach, which is where she lived, on early Friday, and I got there. I got there late Friday night, and we all got up and got in the shower and got ready to go over to the hospice to say hey to mom. And my sister called and said, well, don't hurry, because she passed away 20 minutes ago. That's the way things go. That's that thing at the other end of the tunnel. You know, we thought, we'll get some time with mom. They thought she had a couple weeks left. Nope, she had days. So that does happen. And I don't want to bring you down or be melancholy about it, because we're not. Whatever issues she had have passed, and we think she's in a better place, and we're grateful for that. And that's what we all need to be grateful. I personally am grateful for WLRY, for Mike O'Reilly, and all the things he's helped us with. And all the events that I'm involved in a group called Relationships Under Construction, for which I'm also grateful. Relationships Under Construction is one of the most important things I think that I'm involved in. it is an attempt to counteract all the really, really, really bad education and information out there regarding things like sexuality, but that's not all of it. All kinds of suicide prevention, all these other things. A relationship under construction, it's teaching kids that, frankly, if they want to be able to raise a family and have success, that they just need to simply wait until marriage for sexual activity, for any number of different behaviors to take effect, to be implemented by them. So I'm grateful I'm allowed to do that. And I'm grateful that WLRY and Mike O'Reilly and his wife Kelly were involved in that. I hope they continue to be. I know Mike is, by the way, go out and look for Mike O'Reilly. I think he's under his professional name, but I just subscribed not too long ago to his YouTube channel. Hang on, what is the name of that? Yeah, go out to YouTube and subscribe. Do a search on Music Meanderings. Mike O'Reilly has a YouTube channel, Music Meanderings, and you should go out and check this out. He does a lot of interesting stuff. Now, what many of you, you know, he's a manager of a Christian radio station, and he, of course, is retiring from that. But he has been in the music business for decades. And so he has a lot of interesting things to say about music and about, he is a musician. I'm trying to think of the name of his band. But you'll see things. If you subscribe to him on Facebook, you can see he will put things out about his concerts that are coming up, and he plays a lot of gigs with his boys. And Mike is very knowledgeable, very, very knowledgeable, and he has interesting things to say. I went to his YouTube channel, 10 bands that should be in the Rock Hall of Fame. The 5 worst Christmas songs. Now is an appropriate time for you to go to Mike O'Reilly's Music Meanderings channel, Music Meanderings, and look at some of this. Missing from the Rock Hall, albums you are embarrassed to own. Whatever happened to Julian Lennon, top 10 favorite Christmas albums, 5 people missing from the Rock Hall, ranking the Rush albums. I'm a Rush fan, so Mike and I are both Rush fans. Top 10 live albums, 3 new releases you should check out. Go to Music Meanderings and subscribe. Help Mike out. He would very much like to get monetized on YouTube, and he's not doing anything particularly controversial. And so help Mike out and subscribe to Music Meanderings so that he can make some money making videos. He's got other plans on YouTube channels, and I go out and look for that. He's done a fine job, and right now he's got 17 videos up on Music Meanderings. I think he has a couple of other channels, so go out and check that out. And also go to Facebook and friend him. He's not Mike O'Reilly on Facebook. It's his real name, Mike Lamnick. I hope he doesn't mind I say that. Friend him on Facebook, and you'll get invited. You know, if you're his friend, you'll get invited to come down and see him play in Lancaster and all kinds of places around. And he's involved in church. Music at church, so that's an important thing as well. So keep that in mind. And I'm grateful to WLRY and to Mike O'Reilly, and just basically making the airwaves available to us. Someone said, why don't you go over to WRFD? And I'm like, well, because I know what that costs. That it's exceedingly expensive. Airtime is not cheap. WLRY was a nonprofit, and they ran it like a nonprofit. And essentially, the way it was set up was we made a donation to the station, and we had a monthly fee that we paid, and for that we got our hour of airtime, our monthly every Saturday we got an hour of airtime, and we got to run advertisements. So Barry Sheets and I both ran advertisements on WLRY, him for his consulting business, and me for obviously my dietary supplement business. So we are deeply grateful that was made available to us for such a reasonable price, and we did get feedback from that, although many of you have never sent me an email, disappointingly. Barry never got an email. If you do want to get a hold of me for whatever reason, I'm available. My email address is chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. And yes, you can send me an email. Even though I will not be on WLRY, I'm not bailing out. I may be doing things. I'm still trying to repair principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And I've narrowed it down to about one thing. It's a server issue. I'm about to get a hold of my provider and say what's going on with this, and have them see what they can do on their end to fix it, and then I'll try to fix it on my end as well. I'm sure I did something wrong. Wouldn't shock me. I used to do all kinds of web design, and it got more and more and more complex, and I couldn't keep up. That shouldn't shock you. That's one of those lights coming the other direction. You think you're home free when you design your own website and you figure out how to do it. What happens immediately? The quantum changes take place, and that's the age that we live in, but I am grateful that there are people who know how to keep up. Well, that being said, what else am I grateful for? I am grateful, A, for my health. I've talked about this before. I have lots of aches and pains, and I have lots of aches and pains because I was in an automobile accident I can tell you the date, March 16th, 1981, about 8:50 in the evening. I was hit head-on. I was going, between 55 and 60. And the other guy, we don't know what his speed was. It was estimated he had a car that was much, much lighter than mine, but he hit me and knocked me backwards about 50 feet. So he was really flying. March 16th, 1981, and my brother was with me, and neither one of us was wearing a seatbelt, and in fact, the guy in the other car was not wearing a seatbelt. Now, what his deal was, he was drunk as a skunk. I mean, he was really lit up. And just as we prepared to pass on the road, he came left of center. And we hit basically headlight to headlight. Well, nobody was killed. This is a miracle from God. The fact that none of us were killed and none of us were made... I don't know about the other guy. All I know is he got to go home before I did. I was in the hospital for 17 days. And he got to go home before I did. And my insurance adjuster said they'd talk to him, and he was a very nice guy. And I go, well, I don't care how nice he is. He was drunk as a skunk, and he almost killed me. Now, my brother also received injuries, not as extensive as mine. He kissed the dashboard. As you can imagine, at a combined speed of somewhere around 125 miles an hour, that's an estimate that our I did not have a chance to step on the brake. That's how quickly the guy came over. I still remember. I have flashbacks occasionally of seeing a single headlight coming toward me. And I still remember what I was thinking at the time. Why is there a motorcycle out on March 16th, 1981 in Hastings, Michigan? Not in Hastings, it was in Nashville, Michigan, which is not too far from Hastings. I was in Nashville, Michigan, and it was cold. I remember it was cold. It was in the upper 20s, perhaps. So I'm like, why is someone riding a motorcycle today? That's the last thing I remember. Until I woke up with the engine racing and someone pulling me out of the car. I think my brother thought I was the car was going to burn, and he pulled me out of the car, and I had the presence of mind to immediately do an inventory of my injuries. Well, they were substantial. So I have lots of aches and pains. They put me all back together, and everything, for the most part, works. My left arm is, minorly handicapped. Minorly. We make it work. I learned how to do things with this minor inconvenience. It gets me out of a lot of stuff. I had somebody ask me to help move a piano once off a stage onto the floor, and I said... They go, you can help lift. And I go, I can't. I really can't, because I can't. Okay. The motion called supination and rotation in my forearm, my left forearm, doesn't work. So my arm's stuck straight. I can't turn my palm up except by contorting myself. And I can turn it down, and I have to contort myself. So I've gotten out of lifting pianos and things, but there are other things I can lift. As long as I can grip something like a handle, I'm fine. My left arm is not as strong, and I broke my, my pelvis. So I do occasionally limp, rarely. Remember I ran a dietary supplement company, and one of the things that we made was to maintain joint health. We made a product called Arthritis Complex at first, and then it became, because the FDA doesn't like that. They said, you're making a claim that you can treat arthritis. Okay, fine. So I immediately called it Arthrite. We didn't call it Arthritis Complex. We called it Arthrite, and the claim made was for joint health, which is exactly true. It was for joint health. I am grateful that God gave us the ability to come up with ways to deal with some of the ridiculous regulatory stuff we've had to deal with. And my brother is grateful that he was able to get his four front teeth replaced. He's had issues he's had to have bridges, and I don't know if he's got an implant now, a set of implants now or not. But I've had issues dentally. My jaw was smashed into little bits and had to be put back together. I've got some fun scars. I always joke, there's a movie called The Replacements. And, it's about a bunch of football players who were brought in. There's a football player strike, and these football players are brought in they would be called scabs, if you will, a term I don't like, but it was designed not to be liked, so you wouldn't do it. But they're brought in as scabs, and there's a scene in there when they're in a huddle. And they're getting beat up and you know, all these things. But they kind of pull together and make a team. And they're in a huddle. And they know it's going to be a tough slog. So they get together and they get in the huddle. And they say, remember that glory lasts forever, pain fades, and chicks dig scars. Well, that has not been my... experience, pain doesn't necessarily fade. Glory certainly doesn't last forever, except for the one who deserves glory, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit, and the Father. Their glory lasts forever. Our glory is fleeting and short-lived, and we need to keep that in mind. And I'm grateful that God has given me the ability to remember to be humble. And you may not think so, but I am. I'm humble. So I'm grateful for that. Glory lasts forever, pain fades, and chicks dig scars. So I've got some dandy scars, I show the grandkids, and they're like, "Ooh, Grandpa, that looks terrible." And I said, "Yeah, it was pretty terrible at the time, but I'm pretty much over it at this point." That's the kind of thing we should be grateful for. God intervened. We all three of the people involved in that accident should be dead, and we're not. None of us are. I don't know about the other guy. I don't have any contact. I mean, the guy was he was a resident of Michigan. I was there on a sales trip. At the time, I was a salesman. So I was in Michigan on a sales trip. Coming back from Battle Creek, Michigan, we had gone there to pick something up, and we went to the grocery store, picked a few things up for the family we were staying with, and then that accident occurred. What else am I grateful for? I'm grateful for my business. Believe it or not, you know, I was just looking at this thing. As I had to remake a resume, folks, I haven't had to make a resume for 27 years. Why not? I had my own business for 27 years. So when it came time to make a resume, I was looking at my resume, and I'm grateful for all the experiences that the Lord has provided for me. Because I look back, I've got all kinds of scientific laboratory experience. Now, I haven't been in a laboratory for 27 years. But it's a little bit like a bicycle. Yes, the equipment has gotten far more sophisticated. But I was dealing with some of the most sophisticated equipment available at the time: HPLC, ICP, high performance liquid chromatography. I was dealing with gas chromatographs. I was dealing with ICP, inductively coupled plasma. Spectrophotometry, atomic absorption spectrophotometry. I was doing wet chemistry. I was working with titrators. All this stuff, it's changed. I know it's changed. The it's only gotten better. And I would delight in being able to get my hands back on some of that equipment. I was always an instrumentation guy. I loved it. God instilled in me the curiosity to want to learn those systems. And I did learn those systems, and I became the go-to guy in the labs I worked in understanding how the things worked. I could look at a graph and tell you whether you calibrated it right or not. I could do all kinds of, I got very good at understanding. So my one problem is that on my resume, it says I was a CEO for 27 years, which I was. Well, when people look at that, I'm having trouble because they look at that and they say, "Oh, he wants to be president. He wants to run the department. He wants to." No, I don't. I don't. I'm not interested. You know, if you want to make me a manager after I've been there for a couple of years, you want to make me a department manager, fine. I'll consider that. Although it's a lot more responsibility than I want. I'm 60, almost 68 years old. I don't want a ton of responsibility. People are like, "Well, maybe they don't look at me because I might not be there long enough." Well, I'm good for 5 anyway. Good. I'm, as far as I'm concerned, I'm good for 10. So, how often? And I'm not somebody who jumps around jobs. I leave a job when it becomes necessary. And one of my jobs, the plant closed. And another one of my jobs, the plant laid off 350 people when I'd only been there just over a year. So guess who got it first? I did. Another one of my jobs, at Michigan State University, I graduated and the position ended. So that's you know, I had to go do other things. And my brother and I founded my brother. I'm grateful for my brother who basically provided the capital and much of the know-how for starting this company. He had products made. He was trying to step into a place left by another company that closed down. They actually didn't close down. They went multi-level, which I'll be quite honest that I understand a number of you out there love multi-level marketing. I hate it. There are reasons I'm not going to go in there because some of you will get mad at me. And even though I'm going off the air, I want you not to be mad at me. I hate multi-level marketing. So we decided to go retail, or actually wholesale, to the professional market. So the first company, Rocky Fork Formulas, that we started was wholesale sales to the professional market. In other words, dietary supplements you could buy in the doctor's office. It's a bit of a niche market, but that meant we had to be on our toes with designing new product. And because I have a degree in biochemistry, and we both, my brother and I, have the ability to go out and do the literature searches on herbal and vitamins and mineral supplementation on what ought to go into a specifically designed product for those things. We designed our own products. Very often we started dropping products that just didn't sell very well, and we designed new products. We, in a flurry of activity around the year 2000, 2005, we designed new products that really did the job. The problem being that we were small and had very little money and didn't have the funds for marketing. Now, I suppose we could have gone up to our neck in debt, but we didn't do things that way. We were shoestring. And so my brother and I, we broke apart over not over animosity between us, but for business reasons. In the early 2000s, we had to separate the companies, and that was fine. He and I remained friendly. I worked at his business. He worked at my business. He helped, he'd go on vacation. I'd go run his company for a week. I'd go on vacation. He'd come run my company for a week. That's the kind of relationship that we had. And he'd run his company out of my place, and I'd run my company out of his place. I'd drag my, I had my phones over, and I could answer my phones over there. I could answer his over here, and it worked out really well. So I'm deeply grateful for my brother for those things, for bringing me in when I had nothing. I was job searching, and I'd had a couple of job offers that I still remember one I kind of laughed at. I got a job offer with a big group out in San Jose, California. They actually set they were the organization that set the standards for how things were done in the field I was in, thermal processing. And they came up and they gave me an offer, and it was a lot of money, but it seemed like a lot of money. Let's put it that way. From a perspective of living in the Midwest, it seemed like a lot of money, but it was in San Jose, California, one of the most expensive places to work in the United States of America. I found a house. My wife and I were living in a house in Westerville, and obviously we'd only been there for a little over a year because I got laid off 14 months into my job. So, I went out and interviewed, and I seriously thought about taking this, but I looked at what my house would cost. The exact same house would cost in with the same size lot and everything in San Jose, California, and it was more than double. It was about 110% more than. And I started looking at what things like groceries would cost, taxes would cost, and the amount of money they were offering. I said, I can't live on that. And they go, well, your wife can work. And I go, that's the whole point. My wife and I decided years ago that I was going to make enough money that she didn't have to work and she could homeschool our kids. She could be at home, be a stay-at-home mom with our kids. And that's exactly what she did and what we did. And my brother, with this offer to come work for this company, made that possible. And he started writing me a regular paycheck. Once my unemployment ran out, regular paychecks were something that was very important to me for obvious reasons. I also got a good severance from my previous work. Despite the fact that I'd only been there a year, I got a decent severance, and they bought back my sick and vacation time, which I had most of. So we were able to make it go, and I'm deeply grateful for God and my brother and everything that worked out for us to make that happen. I'm deeply grateful for my wife, the things she's put up with from me. I'm like all men, I can be difficult to live with. I get things set in my head, want to do them a certain way. I tend to be fairly stubborn. So she's put up with me all these years. She's got exactly the right kind of personality for me. We always joke about what kind of tempers that we each have. I always describe her as a spring storm. It's nice and sunny out, and all of a sudden you see clouds on the horizon, and it blows up really fast, and the wind blows, and the lightning, and the thunder, and the birds all hide, and the animals all hide, and it's really bad. The wind blows, and then it goes away, and it all takes about 15 or 20 minutes. And the sun, after the clouds move away, the sun comes out, the disposition is sunny again, and she's all smiles, and I can come out from hiding. I, on the other hand, am sort of like a volcanic eruption. You know something's building, you can feel the earthquakes, and you can see the smoke starting to come from the caldera, but it accumulates. And as things progress and gets where I get darker and darker and darker and darker, the earthquakes come more often, the rumbling starts, the more smoke out of the thing, and all of a sudden, one day, the volcano just blows up. And once it starts to blow up, and once it starts to erupt and all the lava's coming out and all the horrible things that happen, it lasts for a while. Days, weeks, usually not weeks, but I can be mad for days. Denny can be mad for maybe half an hour. So in that way, our personalities are very, very compatible. Now, what does it take to get me mad like that? A lot. I don't anger easily. I just anger deeply. Usually it's cumulative insults and assaults. I have a daughter who has exactly the same personality. She doesn't get mad very often. She can get perturbed, you know. She gets rumbly, but it's not that bad. But once she's mad, it's essentially seeing red, and it lasts for a day or so. It's a personality issue, and her husband is very easygoing. I don't know much about his temper because I've never seen it. I'm sure he gets mad. Now, my daughters all have similar personalities. They have kind of the standard thing. But I'm grateful my wife gave me three children. My children have given me six grandchildren so far. I'm hoping to have more. I would love to have just a passel of grandkids, and that, God willing, that is what will happen. Two of my daughters have three. I have one daughter yet to report in, and I hope she has multiples. I would love to have 10 grandchildren. You know, my wife and I talked. She asked me how many kids I wanted. I said five. She got to three. And unfortunately, she didn't have her first baby until she was 33 years old. So she got tired, understandably. And she said, I just can't do anymore. I said, you know, I get that. I understand completely. I'm slightly disappointed, but I'm grateful for my three. I love them all. I love all my grandkids. I love all their emerging personalities as they get older. The humor, the love, the brains. Very grateful for my grandkids are all pretty smart. I have one grandson who's Down syndrome, and even he's pretty smart, considering his limitations. And I'm deeply grateful for that. Plus, he makes what he doesn't necessarily have in his cognitive ability is he is the most loving kid you can imagine. He's always got a smile. He's always chuckling. He's always running around making us laugh. We love him. He loves us. It's beautiful. And I'm deeply grateful for that. I'm deeply grateful for my sons-in-law. Sometimes, you know, fathers are a little disappointed in their daughter's choices. I'm not. They've each brought a man into the family. Someone said, aren't you disappointed that you don't have any sons? And I said, you're wrong. I have three sons. My daughters brought them to me. And they're all fine men. And they're all very, they're all devout men. They're all men of faith. My daughters are all children of faith. I am deeply grateful to God for calling my daughters to himself. And to Jesus for dying for their sins so that they might be able to have a relationship with him. And I have one daughter that goes to our church. I have another daughter. It's too far for her to come, really. It'd be about 40-mile drive for her to come to church. So she goes to a good church. My other daughter lives in Mobile, and she goes to a good church down there. In fact, I went down in October to witness a debate, a theological debate between a Roman Catholic and a Reformed Baptist in a Presbyterian church. That shows you how eclectic things can become. And I'm grateful for the ability to have been able to do that. I'm grateful. One of the debaters, Dr. James White, is someone who I have followed for decades, 20 plus years. I was deeply grateful. My wife and I were able to do that, despite the fact that I wasn't taking a paycheck out of my company anymore. We found the money and went down for a visit, and now they're up here with us, for which we're also grateful. But we are grateful for the faith of our children, for the growing faith of our grandchildren. They are all growing in the faith. We pray that that continues. And if they maintain that relationship with their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and the Father and the Holy Spirit, then we will be even more grateful than that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you I am so deeply grateful it's very difficult for me to express, I hope that you are also reviewing these things as things come to an end, as things for the year. I pray that you're taking stock and thinking about the things that you are deeply grateful for, both major and minor. I'm deeply grateful for my church and my church family. As you know, I'm an elder. Maybe you don't know if you're you haven't listened that much. I'm an elder at Providence Presbyterian Church, OPC, or that's Orthodox Presbyterian Church, in Pataskala, on Summit Road, 7095 Summit Road. Again, Providence Presbyterian Church, 7095 Summit Road in Pataskala, and we would invite you to join us for service. Our Sunday school starts at 9:45, and our service starts at 11. And we would invite you to come join us, see what we're about. If you don't want to drive all the way over there, and you don't want to, you know, you might want to check us out before you come and visit. Hey, we get it. We post on our website, providenceopc.us. That's providenceopc.us. That's our website address. You can see last week's and the last 3 weeks' sermons. We post those, and it's our from our YouTube channel. We have a YouTube channel. It's Providence OPC Church Pataskala. If you look at Providence OPC Church Pataskala, it will come up, and you can go to the videos, or I take it back. Go to click the live button, and you will see our sermons as far back as we go. It goes back to the pandemic, because that's when we started doing live broadcasts, and we did them for our members who even when we closed our church, we continued to do services online, and boy, did we throw that together in no time. It was amazing to me how quickly we were able to throw that together. Some of them, we didn't know what we were doing. Sometimes you might look at it and say, we still don't know what we're doing. I might agree with you, but God has been gracious in providing equipment and providing the knowledge and the know-how and the ability to get the job done, to do that, to make these things available for people when the church was closed. And remember, we were only closed for maybe 4 or 5 weeks once we figured out, and once God gave us the insight that we were being pinhooked, we were being lied to, we were being manipulated. The elders chose to open the church right back up. Now, again, some people couldn't come, some people wouldn't come, and that's fine. We had no trouble with that. In fact, the elders got together and made an announcement. We also did not make masking mandatory. And we said, if someone is not wearing a mask, or if someone is wearing a mask, please do not use that as an opportunity to berate them. They have made a personal choice based on what they understand the situation to be. I stopped wearing a mask pretty early. The only time I wore a mask and we wore gloves was when we did communion. When we did communion on third Sunday, which is when we do communion, third Sundays. And if you're a Christian believer and you feel like visiting, if you are baptized in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and you are a Christian believer, you're more than welcome to come in and take communion with us. That being said, we wore our mask and our gloves when we issued communion, and that only lasted up to a certain point, and everybody quit wearing their mask, and everybody said, yeah, don't worry about that. And at that point, I'm deeply grateful that our people stayed with us. Now, did we lose members? Yes, we lost members because we wouldn't go the draconian route and force masking and gloves and 6-foot distancing. All of which, by the way, if you paid attention, and this is that light at the other end of the tunnel, being a train coming your direction. It's all turned out to be phony. Dr. Fauci has admitted that the 6-foot distance rule was made up. They have no idea where it came from. They just said it's an arbitrary distance. They made it up. Who knows why? the masking thing. I've said this all along. Remember, I have a degree in biochemistry, and I have an idea about how big these particles are. That virus, the coronavirus, is under 1 micron, a micron being 1/1,000,000th of a meter. So it's under 1 micron, less than 1 micron, but the pores in the masks are slightly under millimeters. In other words, 1/1,000th of a meter. So, in other words, tens, if not hundreds of viruses could march through the pores in the mask. This was the origin of the incredibly goofy attempt to make everybody wear double and triple masks for a time. I still remember Anthony Fauci in front of Congress, and I'm me laughing while he's got 3 masks on, which, and all that would do is basically make it harder and harder and harder to breathe. I guess the theory was if you stopped breathing, you would stop disseminating the virus. How'd that work out? Well, the virus did what it would do, and I'm grateful to God that he has given us things like these immunity things, and when viruses come around, he makes them mutate. And the virus did what it was going to do, and that is mutate to a less and less. They kept telling us it was going to be more and more and more severe. Do you remember that? The new virus, the Delta variant, now we're on the Omicron variant. I just saw a list of the symptoms for the Omicron variant, and I had to laugh. The Omicron variant, a runny nose, red, itchy eyes, sneezing, coughing, slight fever. And I said, oh, so what they're basically telling us is that the Wuhan flu, the coronavirus, COVID-19, has now morphed into the common cold, because the symptoms they all, and everybody I've known who's gotten it recently, has very minor symptoms compared to what I suffered from when I got it in, must have been 21. And I've had it twice since, and every time I've gotten it, it's been less and less and less severe. We knew this was going to happen, and I'm grateful to God for setting up the mechanisms, because what happens is, this is from a scientific perspective, the flu goes in and it infects you, and the way it infects you, it goes in and takes over your cell replication mechanism and turns out copies of itself. But every time it does that, it steals DNA. And it steals it and inculcates it into itself, and as it does that, it weakens itself. This is one of the reasons, if you've ever heard the term, well, in vaccinations, live or killed virus. Real vaccinations have live or killed virus in them. What do I mean by that? Live means it's been passed through organisms. Very often, chickens who lay the eggs, and then the eggs are harvested, and the virus, which is now mutated with the animal gene in it that has no effect, that is then cloned, and more copies are made, and then the proper dose is determined, and you are injected with that changed virus, which gives you immunity but not symptoms necessarily. Sometimes you get sick from a vaccine. We all know that we've all known people who got sick. I had an experience when I was in college. There was a girl I was interested in, and she was little. She was like 5 feet, 5 foot one. And if she weighed 110 pounds, I'd be absolutely shocked, more like 100. She was a nursing student, and they made her take the swine flu vaccine. If you recall back then, 76, they made her take the swine flu because it was going to kill us all. And she got dog sick. I mean, dog sick. And it's not the first thing I've heard. People get sick from, One of the they withdrew that vaccine, and there was a good reason they withdrew it, because A, it killed people, very few, but it didn't have that adverse effect, but it gave many, many people Guillain-Barré syndrome. And if you don't know what that is, it's a form of paralysis. And so this virus, this vaccine, which isn't a vaccine for COVID-19, I think there was one that was a live virus. But in any case, their killed virus was like the early polio vaccine, where the virus was taken and killed by heating, and then you were injected with this dead virus, and you developed antibodies to the virus itself, the dead virus. That's the difference between a live and a killed virus. One is alive, taken from another organism. The dead ones are basically the virus itself that are grown and killed by heat and injected into the person getting the immunity. I've had both polio vaccines. I've had the Sabin and the Salk. Salk was the original, the killed virus. Sabin was the live virus. My dad was involved in a case. Okay. That being said, I'm grateful that we live in an age, I'm really grateful to live in an age when we don't live not knowing what these illnesses are. We do know what these illnesses are. These viruses, these things that we get, these diseases, we know what they are, and we can find out what they are. Now, the fact that COVID-19 was created in a laboratory is now without doubt. It has essentially been admitted. And it was created for what they call gain-of-function research. I am grateful that that is being exposed, because that practice needs to stop. The idea is that you do gain-of-function research to try to get the virus to pass species, and then you look for a defense, a vaccine for it, or some method of getting people ready to deal with that. The chances are that a bat flu in China was not going to jump species until they messed with it. And that's the light at the end of the tunnel. You see all this medical progress, and we see, you know, disease-free life, and that we're sold that bill of goods. And at the end of the tunnel, we see the light, and it's a train coming full speed right at you with things like gain-of-function research. Listen, I'm grateful for the election results, but, ladies and gentlemen, we are a divided country, and, I want you to be sure that as you look down the tunnel and, you know, you think things are all hunky dory because the quote unquote right person won the election, remember, bad things can happen. We could still have an assassination attempt. We could have Donald Trump come into office. Remember, he's got a bit of an ego, and he's very blustery. We've already seen that. I mean, threatening Canada with becoming the 51st state. Well, Canada, I don't have time to go into it. I'm almost out of time for the day. But that being said, Canada, they're probably in some ways laughing about that up there. Canadians and Americans are not the same thing. And Western Canadians, they're like us. Western Canadians are not the same as Eastern Canadians. Quebecers are not the same as Ontario people or the Maritime provinces. And they would not become a single state. They would become multiple states if they were to come into the Union. But, I mean, Donald Trump has said some things that bring me pause. I think a lot of it's his hyperbolic style. But that being said, I would keep your radar up and watch things and hold his feet to the fire and hold Congress's feet to the fire. We're about to go through crazy stuff having to do with confirmation to the cabinet. So keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. You know, as I sign off, this is our last show. And as I sign off, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. And chairman at principledpolicy.com. That's chairman at principledpolipolicy.com. And, well, I can't ask you to join me again next week for another Principles and Policies, because there won't be one on WLRY next week. But I am deeply grateful for your paying attention to us while we were on the air, while Barry and I were on the air, and then me by myself. So I'm deeply grateful. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and may you have a blessed year, and especially a blessed new year.